Are you ready? It's
not ready. We're going to be. Turn this thing around. We have a little bit of strangeness going on. I know this is strange.
I'm Wayne St. Germain, by the way. How many of y'all know me already? How many of y'all don't know me? Okay. How many of y'all don't give a damn? All right, that's a majority rules there. Okay, we're going to go with that. All right, excellent. Well, I think I'm loud enough. Am I loud enough? Think so?
As long as you have it closer or anything.
Closer to my... Yeah, may I need to crank that up a little bit. I don't want to get too close to it. Yeah. Oh, it may need a battery or something. You never know. Yeah, green light's still on. All right. I know you're probably wondering, who is this guy? Well, there he is, right there. He's pretty cute guy. It's an old picture, though. Anyway, I'm out of Oklahoma City. We're an outfit. We used to be called TSI. You probably remember TSI. Yeah, they used to come here every year. They changed our name to TNQ, or TQ, Training and Qualification under PHMSA, okay? Pipeline Hazards Material Safety Administration. This is my telephone number, just in case any of y'all are interested. Direct line. A lot of people call us and they have questions. Like Leonard was doing this morning, giving you an opinion instead of an interpretation is what we do. Nothing in writing. All verbal. Now, we also have a live person available at this phone number. This is my direct phone line. Just want to give you this up front. And this is our fax number. So you can always reach somebody there. And also some people send us emails. So they ask questions. We get these emails or questions or phone calls from all over the United States. Puerto Rico to Alaska, Hawaii, North Dakota down to Louisiana. It might be a mobile home park operator wanting to know what to do with his master meter system. Or it might be the DOT chief out of one of the regions kind of wondering what we think about something. So since we train the inspectors, that's the reason they give us a call. Okay? Before we get on with this mission statement, I want you to know that I know it's after lunch. I can tell by the looks on your faces. But I'm going to try to keep this thing going here this afternoon. I'm trying to keep the spirit up as best I can, even though we're talking about the regulations, okay? All right? Now, in that vein, I just want to let you know that I love to talk. You might not know it, but I do love to talk. I get paid to do this, and I can't hardly believe it half the time. I've been a Toastmaster. Anybody familiar with Toastmasters? I've been a Toastmaster since 1985. You familiar with Toastmasters? Yep. Are you a Toastmaster?
You bet.
I'm a distinguished Toastmaster.
Cool.
That is the highest rating you can get, isn't it? I love to talk. I love to compete. I love to do it. And in doing so, it's just a lot of fun. And since I was 5 years old, I've had this need to be the center of attention. This job gives me that. I get to be the center of attention. I get paid to do this, and people, you know, recognize me. I mean, just the other night, was at a party, and I mean, four or five people. I told the wife, four or five people have recognized me since I've been here. They said, she said, it's a family reunion. So, you know, that was a reason. But I love to talk, and I love to try to make things a little more fun for folks. Sometimes I put on little gatherings at the house, little training sessions on public speaking, and I gather up a few folks, you know, and I'll be doing that. And I had one going the other night. It was going real good. I mean, I was cooking. Everything was lovely. Till the wife got home from the store, she unlocked the door, and two Amway salesmen and six Jehovah's Witnesses escaped. Just when I had them. They're terrible. Anyway, so I love to do this. I love to talk in front of groups, and it's just a fun thing to do. But what we do is, and let me get into it here. We're trying to make our system safe, the pipeline system safe. From PHMSA, the Department of Transportation, whatever you want to call us. We're trying to make it more environmentally sound, make it safe, and something to be more reliable, even though it is getting older, like Leonard was saying this morning. Okay? So it's just something that we're trying to do. We're trying to do it better.
Yeah, I need to move this thing forward. No, excuse me just a second.
All right, there we go. I think I got it in the go-along now. Anyway, we reorganized this outfit a few years ago, and you're probably all familiar with this, so I'm not going to dwell on the thing, but we got hooked up with the hazardous material bunch, and it made more sense, didn't it? Another thing I liked about it had the word pipeline in it. You remember that old RISPA? RSPA, that's what we used to be on, Research and Special Programs Administration. That never made any sense, did it? But this is really nice. You got pipeline. Hazardous material handles all the other modes of transportation. Hazmat, that portion of it, we handle the pipeline. Okay? Now, you can see our little umbrella there, our DOT umbrella. You see, we're situated right here on the fence, and we do the training for OPS and all the states. But we don't just do the training, folks. Okay? We go to all the regions, we go to all the states. And we put on these seminars to not only, the main reason is to try to help to inform or clarify for you, the operator, what some of these new rulemakings are or what some of the old ones mean. You know, some of the little changes in interpretation or just to be here for you just to converse with you. Because you know you just can't shake hands over the phone, can you?
No.
So, well, no, that's true. Let's not go there. What is he talking about? Anyway, we do a lot of things. Like I said, we train the federal and state inspectors. We also help in putting on these seminars. So every now and then we put on an industry course, but the thing is we've been short-handed. Our main goal is to train the federal and state inspectors, put these seminars on. Last industry course we put on, you probably missed it. It was in Anchorage, Alaska 4 years ago. I didn't see you there.
No.
And it was a liquid course, so you probably wouldn't have been there anyway, would it? But it went well, and I hope that we'll, in the not too distant future, next year or two, that we'll start back up with some of these industry courses. Because I myself took an industry course back in 1992 at TSI for a week on natural gas and on Part 192. And it really was a good course. And you pick up a lot of things. PHMSA, like I said, takes care of a lot of different things. They look at some of the things that we heard this morning, as far as Leonard was talking about, as far as monitoring the state programs, the compliance activities, of course. They look at some of the standards and technologies that's available today. And, of course, sometimes they come up with some of these assessments and strategic plans for the pipeline industry. And work with industry as a team effort on a deal more and more on a lot of these regulatory situations. Now, in the case of the states, of course, some of the states adopt just the federal regulations. Some of them have a little more stringent requirements. The states, as you heard this morning, have to meet the minimum of the federal code, but they can go beyond that. And that's what Nathan and all do. They also review their regulations to see if they need to do a little bit of something to make it a little bit more, shall I say, adapt to your particular part of the country and your needs or your operator's needs here. Okay? Now, of course, interstate pipelines are usually handled by the federal government, unless they're the state is what they call an agent of the federal government. Now, y'all not an agent, are you? I didn't think so. Some, just a handful of states are agents, and they can look at interstate pipelines. For most part, most states look at intrastate pipelines. Just want to cover a little bit of for some of you that are new. How many of you have never attended one of these before? Okay, now that you've seen me, how many is not coming back? Okay, just want to check that out. All right, good. You know, it's a funny thing about that. I was surprised that it was such a nice day out there. It is a nice day. In fact, I can't understand. I wore a long sleeve shirt, and it's just nice out there. Yeah, I mean, you know, I thought that it would be like winter. Cold, cold. Because they said it'd be a cold day. Next time they'd have me back. But I just can't understand how come it's a nice day. But I heard that the commission, I was glad to see the commissioner here this morning, that the commission had actually voted a vote of 8-7 to have me back this year. It's pretty, not unanimous, but good enough for me. I guarantee you. You know, talking about making these presentations, you know, there's different groups that I've talked in front of. One of them, only one of them puts a rating on their speakers. Y'all don't do that, do you? You don't give out a little rating. And down in Lafayette, Louisiana, the Louisiana Gas Association, they give a rating. They put out a little book each year. And in the book, they got a list of all the speakers each month that have talked to that group. Isn't that neat? And they put little bells on the side of the speakers. And if you get four bells, like you're a super great speaker, you know. If you get three bells, you're a very good speaker, you know. Two bells, you're an average speaker. One bell, you know, you're kind of poor. I'm proud to say I got the Nobel Prize. Yeah, I was one of the few people ever to get that. That's what's working on for me. Okay. What your job is, of course, you saw what the state's job is, on part of the state's job, of course, part of what the Fed's job. Your job is to comply with the standards and regulations and to prepare and to follow, you know, an operation and maintenance plan for your pipeline. So we each all have a job to do, and the thing about it is it all revolves around these regulations. Now, we're here today to kind of talk about some of the changes or updates in some of these regulations and other documents that we send out, like advisory bulletins and things of this nature. Also, part of your job is to maintain records, right? When they come and inspect you, what do they want to look at? Records, huh?
Records.
The records pretty much tell them that you've done something, right? If you don't have records, it's like it never was done. Is that correct?
That's
correct. So you're required to maintain those records as required by these regulations. Now, we've had some initiatives to improve pipeline safety. Some of this, of course, to improve the nation's pipelines. The focus of these initiatives, reduce any likelihood of any incidents in high consequence areas and things of this nature. And these are the kind of things that we're looking to. Let me check my watch here. I want to make sure. 1:30? What time are we supposed to?
To break?
Yeah.
2:00.
2:00. Okay. I just want to make sure. Good. Basically, our responsibility together as industry and government is to the American people is to make sure that the pipelines are built, operated, and maintained in a safe manner. Okay. So our main goal, of course, is to reduce the risk of the pipelines that could cause harm to those people or to the environment. Additionally, it gives the public a lot more confidence in the public safety. Okay. Also, I want you to understand that it's not just natural gas pipelines that affect how we do things. I just received an email, and just yesterday, I believe it was, or the day before, where we're going to more and more look at the liquid codes and the gas codes and trying to bring them more in line with each other. How many of you have liquid pipelines also? And you've got gas? Okay. Now, you realize there are some differences between them. Yeah. But, I mean, some fairly, you know, like, let's just pick a couple areas, like corrosion. The criteria is a little different for corrosion. A lot of the other stuff is pretty much the same. Welding may have some different practices there. Also, in some of the other parts of the code. And more and more each, every so many years, it's always, we're trying to bring them into line a little bit more. Not just for you folks, but also, it makes sense. Why should it be different for one than the other unless it comes into play of that high, you know, compressibility factor or something like that? So that's one of the things that they'll be looking at. So we take into consideration hazardous liquid pipelines, natural gas, distribution pipelines, liquefied. Anybody got a liquefied natural gas facility? Okay, one. That's always one. It's always that one guy. How many got a compressor station? Okay, good. It's usually the one guy, but you don't even have that, do you? Okay, good. All right. Anyway, all of these facilities are looked at. One of the things that cause these things is accidents. Accidents occur, and that's the type of things that can bring about regulation change. We had a large incident years ago in Edison, New Jersey. Natural gas transmission line blew out. Elderly woman died, but it was indirectly from the accident. But still, what is it? It's spectacular, isn't it, when one of these puppies blows up? I mean, it catches the news. You get people, you know, the neighbors going, I thought it was a nuclear explosion. You know, and those kind of things. You know, and it's just, it catches the news, and it causes the public to raise up in arms about how come somebody's not doing something about this. It makes you look bad, makes us look bad. And really, when we always trying to tell them, and it's true, that we have probably the one of the safest modes of transportation. Yeah. Hey, look, I got an idea. I need your help. Will you help me? Now, I don't have anything to give you, so I have no prize for you. Maybe a glass of water, a cup of coffee. I want you to keep an eye on the rest of these people.
I can do that.
All right. If you see somebody nodding off, okay? No. No, we don't want to go there. This is a job of responsibility here, partner. I pick somebody for this in all my classes. Your job is to call for a stretch break.
Oh, I can do that.
Okay. Now, were you in the service?
No.
No? Well, maybe you could kind of act like you were, and got, I want you to bring it up from the gut here.
I got a service man for you right there.
No.
He was falling asleep. You don't understand me. He was falling asleep, and that's why you're hitting on him. Right? That's how you make him look good. That's how you make him look good.
I didn't say that, Bonnie. He said
wake up.
But if you see somebody else nodding off besides yourself, I want you to say, call for a stretch break. Now, what you got to do is say, stretch break.
Okay. On your feet.
On your feet. Yeah, that's the way. That's what I like. It. Yeah. Okay, good. Yeah. Something I learned from Roosevelt.
I learned that from the Marines.
Oh, Marines. Okay. Army.
I'm sorry.
I had a joke, but I can't tell it. Okay. Let's go on for now. These things occur, and they bring a lot of attention to the need for something to be done and the demand by the public for things to be done. So we look at not only these natural gas incidents, but also like the one up in Bellingham with that gasoline flowing into the creek and catching a fire, and the fatalities and the injuries that are caused by these incidents. Even though they're few and far between, they are spectacular. They catch a lot of news. The one down in Carlsbad, large diameter natural gas pipeline, transmission line. This brought the integrity management rule. All of these incidents helped to bring the integrity management rule. And we're going to be talking about DIMP. How many of y'all are looking forward to that? Well, we're going to kind of focus on DIMP. How many distribution operators we got up in here today? Okay, quite a few. Well, I know it's your turn in the barrel. I mean, that's your turn. Now, the good news is I'm going to tell you about the DIMP rule, an overview of the DIMP rule, which you're probably familiar with. You're probably just loving it, ain't you? Then I'm going to tell you what I just found out, like in the last couple of days. And I'll tell you, you know, what the latest that I can tell you on. I can't tell you everything. And I'll explain that, too. But anyway, all of these things bring about changes in the regulations. That's one of the things. Sometimes it's just a company that says, hey, you know, these regulations have been the same for so many years. Maybe we need to consider making some changes. And we'll look at something on that, too, as far as maximum allowable operating pressure and things of that nature. The thing about it is we had some serious incidents, but there is some good news on the horizon. It's kind of a continuing downward trend on these things, okay? Now, the vast majority, I'm sorry to say for you distribution folks, is that the vast majority of the serious incidents, though, were gas distribution. Now, as far as the significant incidents, we have incidents, you know, the property damage over $50,000. We kind of take all these things and we kind of massage the numbers, you know, and we change the figures so that it's in 1984 dollars, and everybody, in other words, all the incidents are figured out in the same cost for inflation and all that other stuff, so that we can then come out with some numbers that are significant and make sense. I can still remember when an incident was if you had a fire on a pipeline. And it could have been a little tubing and or a hydrostatic test leak. Some of you guys may be too young to know it. If a line failed with a hydrostatic test, you had to report it as a reportable incident years ago. So things have changed. So we have to adjust these things to make sure that we're talking about the same thing so we can compare one year with another. But there is an overall downward trend. And it's good. The liquid lines, they're also in a downward plunge as far as that. And like I said, gas distribution kind of staying flat. It's kind of staying flat. It's not that it's getting real bad. It's not getting better, though. It's kind of staying the same. But we all know that DIMP is going to help us out, don't we? I keep pushing that stuff. You see that? Yeah. Anyway, basically, data-driven organization here. We analyze the incidents. We take the inspection findings from the states and also from the Fed. We take those from across the regions and the United States. And it helps. It helps to improve the availability of the information that comes through our website. I'm going to pass that website information on to you a little later in the presentation because I think you're going to find that there are some good things that you can download from our website. Now, if you look at that code book that you have, Leonard was talking about, you see on the front of that thing, it does say the minimum federal safety standards. Do you see that written on there somewhere, sir?
Yep.
Say, yes, I do.
Yes, I do.
I like, see, that's where I ask the questions. He gives me the answers. Anyway. Like Leonard was talking about, and what we put out at T&Q, this is the minimum federal standard. But an operator needs to utilize prudent operator judgment, as he was alluding to, sound engineering practices, that comes under there too, standard industry practices, like what's everybody else doing, and also, like, what are some of these good industry practices that are on paper, like API and ANSI and ASME and all those other industry RPs and standards and things of this nature. Now, some of those things are incorporated into the code, and we're going to see a little change in the code in the last few months, in the last several months, that have changed some of those industry standards or recommended practices that are in referred to in the code. How many of you know what incorporated by reference means? Okay, I see about three or four hands. In the code, we have a section that's called incorporated by reference. And what it is, it's referring to like API 1104. How many of you are familiar with that? That's what is that, sir? Welding, isn't it?
Welding, yeah.
That's it. That's good. Or API 5L for a pipe, right? Okay, line pipe specification. Okay. Now, you're familiar with those, but are you familiar with the fact that our code here, federal code, has a section in it that says, okay, we are incorporating by reference these sections of API 1104. Or it's referred to in different sections by piece. Section 6, Section 9. You're looking at different parts of the code, right? That's right. Very good. See that? He's awake now. He's thinking. I know that.
I was awake when you were talking.
I know that. No problem. But anyway, what the code does, it says either it's incorporating it all by reference, all of this industry code, or a piece of it. So we're going to look at a few of those changes also as we've gone through these routines. But we have to realize if it incorporates an industry code, either a piece of it or all of it, if it says we're referencing this and we're incorporating it by reference, it means that that industry code, like the one that Leonard held up, right? Was that, what was the number of that one? You remember?
Come on,
you took notes, didn't you? What was it? What page of notes? Is that 1162 right there? Was that it?
Yeah.
Oh, he's doing good. Anyway, what it is, that becomes a code for you. Whatever that industry code says, that's the code, even though it's not all written into this code book. So this code book, I'm sure you remember last time you got one of these, that sucker is about maybe half inch thick, now it's about what, maybe almost 3/4 inch thick, 5/8, somewhere in that neighborhood. Believe it or not, there's a lot more here than you can see, because it incorporates by reference industry code. We're going to talk more about that in just a little bit, okay? Now, why this thing is doing that to me, but I don't care. You don't know what I'm talking about, but I do. Okay. Bear with me. That's weird. All right. Now, one of the other things that we put out besides regulations, we got this thing called an advisory bulletin. Anybody ever got an advisory bulletin in here? Okay. Advisory bulletin also comes in there with alert notices, but advisory bulletins I really like. Advisory bulletins, you know those tea parties they had the other day? This is similar to that. In that this is regulation without representation. Nah, I just mean that jokingly. Actually, folks, think about it. They send you an advisory bulletin. You, Mr. Operator. They say, look, Mr. Operator, you know, some folks having some trouble down in Florida and with this kind of valve. We think you maybe ought to go out, you know, consider going and look at all your valves like that. You got 500 of them, you know, you're going. I ain't gonna do that. That's just money, and they don't even know for sure that you know it's not in the rules, so he don't go look at it. Then the law, you know, the law doesn't require him to, and then something happens on one of them valves, right? And your brother-in-law who works for you, he was sitting next to it, and you know he lost his pinky finger because that valve blew out. And then you're in court because your brother-in-law sued you at the drop of a hat. And the lawyer said, well, how come you didn't go look at them valves? And you Well, I didn't have to. Well, didn't you get that advisor above me? And you said, well, that's not part of the code. But you knew about it, didn't you? Well, yeah. Well, you should have had a responsibility as a prudent operator and all this stuff. In other words, it's kind of like they said, maybe you ought to go do this. If you don't do it, something goes wrong. Which is a lot of times what's in the code is like that, too. You're all right as long as something don't go wrong. And then if it does, you got kind of caught up in it. All right. Now, the last one of these little puppies come out wasn't like that. It didn't hurt you like that. It was dealing with any of you had direct sales line? Did y'all have direct sales line? Did. This kind of changed that up, didn't it? You don't have to mess with that anymore, do you? Or do you have something you still have to mess with?
They're all reclassified as transmission.
Yeah, they're all transmission now, so it's a little different situation. So you're under a different bailiwick, shall we say. So it wasn't one of them things where something could blow out and then you weren't doing something. You're still required to do pretty much, well, exactly the same thing pretty much as you were before. But it just changed in the jurisdictionality of the deal. Okay. Is that correct, sir? Is that what it did? Or what did it do? How did it affect your direct sales line?
Reclassified them all as transmission.
I mean, were you inspecting those before?
Yeah.
Are you still doing that?
Yep.
But it's different in that it's transmission. I mean, do you have different regulations here for those is what I'm saying?
We adopt the federal regulations.
So it's just the same?
Yeah.
Okay, so it didn't change a darn thing. Looking, some states have a little different situation there. And they have different requirements for the transmission than they did before for your direct sales they had before. The same thing here. All right, which one's this? Oh, this is the good one. Mm-hmm. This is talking about DIMP here and excess flow valves. And we're going to be talking about DIMP because this was kind of a precursor. The reason this thing came out. This was an advisory kind of thing, whereas the Pipes Act of 2006 required PHMSA to do something, not the operator. It required PHMSA to write regulations. And what happened? PHMSA did not get around to the DIMP rule. In fact, we're still in limbo on the DIMP rule, aren't we? So basically, they sent this thing out saying, you know, we'd like you to maybe get out there and start putting those excess flow valves. Please.
Okay.
And they please. If you would. And that's basically what it boiled down to. It was just a request to do that. And again, a request but not a regulation. Okay?
Is that another word for a relief valve?
Excess flow? No.
It's not?
No. No, it's more of like if the line got cut and the excess amount of flow occurred,
okay,
and it was shut off.
All right.
That's a simple way of kind of putting it.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. Hey, you know what? I've been standing up here all this time. I cannot believe it. I have not told a Cajun story. I want y'all to know that I spent 30 years in the pipeline industry before I came to the government. Some say the dark side. But I spent about 5 years in operation and maintenance down in South Louisiana. 5 years in compressors, about 7 different stations, including the storage field, excuse me. 5 in construction. And then we're getting close, Bob.
10 minutes.
Oh, that's good. Got time for the story. I'm right on. Don't worry about it. No. Nope. DIMP's the big thing, and it's coming in the next. I don't want to start it before. Five in construction back during the boom. Laid a lot of pipeline in Texas and Louisiana and Oklahoma and Mississippi. And then I went into regulations and started using all the things I learned to write O&M manual and stuff like that for the company. And then they noticed I like to train people, and they let me start going around and train people in different subjects, including somebody hazmat and stuff like that. So it all blended together to bring me where I'm at now. So it's a wonderful thing. But I am from Louisiana. I am from South Louisiana. And I am, when I say South Louisiana, I mean below I-10.
Wow.
Yes, sir. And I want you to know, I coined this phrase. You probably never heard this before. So if you hear it again, you know where that came from. Below I-10, the Cajun-Dixon line. Anything north of that, Yankees. Baton Rouge, New Orleans, Yankees. So every now and then when I'm out here, I tell a few Cajun stories. And I like to tell that Cajun story. And I'm going to talk real slow so y'all can understand those Cajun stories, okay? All right. Now, I don't know. I was going to tell y'all a story about Boudreaux and Thibodeau and T. Claude Seminole. They're working on a drilling rig out of Lafayette, Louisiana. Anybody ever been to Lafayette, Louisiana? It's below I-10. Anyway, they're working on there. And T. Claude, you know that high point on top there, that's atop the drilling rig? He fell off of that. Nearly. I hate to start off with a sad story like that, but that's what happened. And Boudreaux and Thibodeau, you know, they call up the coroner and the policeman, and they come out there with the petroleum car with that syringe on top, full blasting. And Boudreaux and Thibodeau said, well, who's going to go tell Miss Seminole that her husband, King Claude, done died out there? Boudreaux said, I can do that. I'm good at telling people stuff like that. I'm good at reckoning. He said, okay, so go ahead. The Boudreaux leave. 2 hours later, he come back with a cold six-pack of beer on his arm. Thibodeau said, where you been? He said, well, I went down to tell Miss Seminole that he thought done died out here. Went down to the trailer park where we all stayed. And you come back 2 hours later with a six-pack under your arm? Yeah. He said, tell me, how that happen? Or where'd you get the six-pack? She gave it to me. She gave you a six-pack of beer? Yeah. He said, well, what happened? He said, well, I went over there. Yeah. He said, I went to the trailer. Yeah. And the door was open, but the screen door was closed. And I just knocked on the side of the trailer. Yeah. And she come walking to the door, and I say, is this the widow Seminole? She said, no, she said, I'm not a widow. He said, I bet you a six pack, y'all. We had the one LNG guy over here. Okay, this is your stuff right here. Partner, take a look at it. What you think? Look good? What it is talking about operators, and it includes you is what happens. That's you get a little piece of the action here, all right? But it's talking about operators submitting their National Pipeline Mapping System information. You guys are pretty much familiar with having to turn that in. And getting all that put into one deal on the map. Hazardous liquid gas, it's all going to come from the annual report. Now, the thing they're adjusting is, starting in January this year, gas transmission, the mapping system stuff, going to be turned in with the annual report on the 15th of March, just like it has been always. Basically, it's going to represent everything that you owned last year up until the end of December. LNG. Now, your stuff is going to be submitted at the same time, March 15th. And I know you got that turned in on time, right?
Right.
Right, there you go. And it represented, of course, the same thing, the same dates. Hazardous liquid, a little bit different. They got till June. You hazardous liquid bars, basically till June of this year to turn in your stuff, June 15th to be exact. And it represents the same period of time up to the end of last year. And so basically, it's changing that requirement. It's going to be from March 15th to June 15th from now on for those applicable deals. And the submissions basically all going to be on December 31st of the year before. So it's just nailing that down. Okay? All right. 5 more minutes. Plastic pipe. Man, they come out with some of that polyamide or polyamide. How you say that thing right there, partner? PA-11, right?
Yeah.
Well, sometimes they got some of them. I call it Tupperware. I don't know about that's what I call it. But anyway, what it is they're allowing some of this new stuff, some of this new plastic pipe, and this may pique your interest here, to operate at a higher design pressure, give them a higher design pressure limit, and they're raising that factor from a 0.32 to a 0.40 in some cases, okay? You're up to a 0.40, let's put it that way. And the design pressure limit from 125 to 200 pounds. I don't want to be nowhere near this stuff, but they say it can be done, it's all right and all that, but I don't know if you ever touch one of these plastic pipes when you're digging. I hope this. This stuff's pretty tough, though, isn't it? Isn't it supposed to be pretty tough?
No.
Yeah? Okay, good. You want to operate the hole? 200 pounds for a certain type of PA-11. No, it's really it is. The boss, my boss is really the big plastic pipe guy. He's going to Canada, I believe, next month. Try to get him to bring me back a Cuban cigar while he's up there. But I've seen some of this stuff. It is pretty darn tough as far as they've done experiments and stuff. Digging around and stuff like that. It's pretty darn tough. So I kid around a little bit because I'm an old transmission guy. I'm an old steel guy. But this rule took effect in January of this year and basically allows some people to go in there and utilize this stuff and raise their pressures up to 200 pounds in certain cases. And for some of the distribution folks, that was good news on for that. Now, DIMP. We've reached DIMP. We have reached 3 minutes to go. We have one more story we can throw into the breach because I like
question. It.
I didn't ask for no damn. What you got there, Bob?
Back to the previous slide. What size of transmission line, that 0.32 to 0.40, what size of pipe are we talking?
That's a good question.
I mean, 200 PSI, that's a lot.
That's it.
That's a damn lot.
I think there is a certain size requirement in the deal. I do not know specifically. Are you familiar with any size restrictions on that stuff? I don't know why in my head I'm thinking there is.
2 inch maybe or something?
Oh, no, I think it's larger.
Bigger than that?
Yeah, but it's the same thing with, like, steel, in that your wall thickness and something has to change up. I mean, I see some of this plastic stuff got walls aren't that heavy. I remember one time, you know, they talked about this.
Don't waste a lot of time on it. I'm just curious.
Okay, hell with it.
Okay.
You talked me out of it. Uncle Noon. I didn't tell y'all nothing about Uncle Noon. Real quick story about Uncle Noon. Uncle Noon, his wife. Did I tell you about Uncle Noon? Uncle Noon's wife, her name is Aunt Mess. Now, we're going to talk about Aunt Mess later because her face is just like her name. But Uncle Noon, Aunt Mess, she went off to visit her sister, and she brought her daughter with her. Left Uncle Noon back at the house in Barrackhead, Louisiana. How many of y'all ever been to Barrackhead? Cam Izzy got a big sign that said Barrackhead ahead. Nobody seen it. Anyway, he left all alone with the baby. And, you know, the baby's crawling, you know, just about that age, you know, getting around a little bit, you know, about 7 months, something like that. And old Boudreau come by there. Come on, Sabah, noon, how y'all? He's talking that Cajun French. He said, I'm doing all right, but I got to keep washing these diapers and washing these diapers. And it's either changing diapers or washing diapers. He said, you don't want to go get a bière? He said, I ain't got time to get no bière. I got to wash diapers, clean diapers. Man, you don't have to do that. I said, what you mean? He said, man, you can go down to Walmart then. You get you some of them disposed diapers. Got them plastic tape, them papa. And you get you some of that. You ain't got to do all that washing them diapers. He said, really? Oh, yeah. Man, sure enough, he go down there and he come back. And Boudreau come back in 3 or 4 days. He said, did you get some of them disposed diapers? Oh, I said, man, it's been nice since then. I got some of them. It's been just really good. I had to wash no more diapers. And just about then, that little baby, cute little girl come around the door frame there, kind of crawling along, you know. Got one of them disposed Tampa diaper on. That thing hanging down around her knee, dripping down the leg, hanging down. He said, man, don't you think you ought to change that diaper? He said, no, on the box, he said it's good for 10 or 12 pounds. And I want y'all to know I got 10 or 12 pounds left for y'all after the break. How much of a break we got there, partner?
Oh.
15 minutes. We're going to start up in 15.